Welcome to Energy Insights. This is Dan Corin, and I am pleased to have with us Enchanted Rock's Chief Revenue Officer, Jayesh Goyal, who's going to share with us some insights into what Enchanted Rock has been up to lately and some of the interesting offerings they have in the area of renewable energy microgrids. So Jayesh, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks very much for having me on, Dan.
Let's start off by having you give us a overview of what Enchanted Rock's been up to lately and the company as a whole.
Sure. So Enchanted Rock was founded in 2006, and really, you know, we're an industry leader in providing electrical resiliency as a service. So the way we do that is we deploy these advanced microgrids, and they're dual-purpose microgrids. We essentially are able to protect companies and their critical infrastructure by providing resiliency as in power backup, but we also are able to protect the grid infrastructure and provide services on the grid. So that's hence the dual nature purpose of the microgrids. So this basically allows us to ensure the business continuity as well for our customers, and then it also allows us to essentially support critical infrastructure. So we've been doing this now for a range of customers. I mean, customers as diverse as, you know, grocery stores, water utilities, data centers. We recently announced a large deal with Microsoft to support one of their data centers in San Jose. So there's quite a wide range of customers because the need for this critical infrastructure backup is becoming really very prevalent with all the grid outages we're having.
Sustainability is a hot topic these days. And so what sustainability trends would you say are influencing microgrids? And how is Enchanted Rock implementing decarbonization strategies toward that end?
Right. So I think if we just step back a second and look at the broader industry, you know, pretty much every company is very focused on sustainability and they're announcing some targets around carbon reduction goals. So everybody is talking usually about reducing their emissions by a certain level by 2030 and trying to become carbon neutral by 2050. So that's a broad trend around the importance of sustainability and companies really paying attention to this. Now, when it comes down to microgrids, people are also concerned about energy security. And with all the disruptions that are there in the grid now, whether it's from weather events, any disasters and so on, and even just in some cases, aging infrastructure, companies are really concerned about, will we have power when we need it for our critical needs? And so that's why there's been such an interest in microgrids. And in terms of, you know, decarbonization strategies, so Enchanted Rock actually had started off first with diesel, but then we quickly started transitioning to now using natural gas because of the reduced emissions. And we are also looking at renewable natural gas. So that's something we've been able to provide to our customers to, again, help them achieve their goals of becoming carbon neutral. We're also looking in the future at hydrogen. We're looking at how we would integrate battery and storage into these microgrids. So those are some of the other ways we're helping basically with the decarbonization.
So can you expand on the renewable natural gas microgrid? How is that a decarbonization strategy? And to what extent are companies implementing those kinds of technologies?
Right. So for the renewable natural gas, the main idea here is that, you know, you essentially, there's a whole bunch of, when you have waste and that's generating methane, you can use that and use that to derive the natural gas. Now, there are several ways you could do it. There's still not a real great infrastructure for getting that natural gas, that renewable natural gas, directly piped to some of our facilities. But you can actually get this gas and inject it into the grid at various points, basically to offset the natural gas that the customers might use. And that's how you essentially offer them this premise of basically getting to carbon neutral, because this is this gas otherwise would have just been released into the atmosphere. And obviously with methane, that's quite a concern. So we have been implementing this, as I mentioned, for one of our data center customers, Microsoft. That's where we've offered the service. And I think if you look at what utilities are doing right now, they're making a lot of investments in trying to expand the availability of renewable natural gas. So we do expect prices to come down as well.
I thought microgrids were focused more on solar plus energy storage type situations, maybe some small wind involved. How does renewable natural gas compare to those alternatives?
Right. So I think the main thing when we are looking at our microgrids is because we are essentially supporting mission critical facilities for our customers. The main thing is the reliability of the supply and constant guaranteed supply. So natural gas is what we chose to use, mainly because we can provide, continuous power for many days at an end. If you look at some of the recent outages we've had to support with our customers, for example, during Winter Storm Uri last year, we had to have some facilities running for 4 days at a stretch with their full load. That's something that's really hard to do with just solar and batteries. It's something that, yes, you could provide power maybe for a few hours, but to do 4 hours of continuous operation for a 60 megawatt facility, that's going to be really hard to scale. So what we've been really telling our customers is that for right now, for these kinds of needs, the natural gas provides that stability of supply, but we can supplement that with adding solar and battery storage to that microgrid. So that way we can reduce essentially the emissions that are used. I think over time, there'll be even cleaner alternatives. I mean, as I said, we are doing some research into using hydrogen. And as I think the battery capacities increase and prices come down, there will be more and more of that integrated. But that's why right now with our microgrids, we still rely quite a bit on natural gas, which by the way, is a lot cleaner than diesel. And if you look at our generators in particular, we recently announced that we had achieved CARB-DG certification, basically with the California Air Resources Board. And so we were one, I think, the only reciprocating engine that met that standard. Usually that standard is, something that the fuel cell guys have been applying for, but it essentially showed that we can reach really low emission standards even with our systems.
Beyond sustainability benefits, what are some other motivations for customers to switch from diesel to gas?
So I think the other things that they're looking at is just the robustness of the gas infrastructure, right? So when there is a major weather event and you are basically not getting power, then just getting diesel sometimes to the site is also a big challenge. We saw that during the winter storm, that people were just not able to access diesel for their generators. The natural gas infrastructure is much more robust in those kinds of situations. You're talking about piped gas to the site. So usually there's less disruption there. Also, there is just regulations in different states that are basically preventing you from using diesel. And that's happening across the board, not just in California, but across the country. More and more, there is scrutiny and the permitting becomes much harder if you're trying to use diesel now. So I think with that, people are also looking at in the future, if they want to use hydrogen, can we use natural gas generators now, which could be then retrofitted to use hydrogen? That is something people are looking at for just future proofing as well. But those are some of the reasons that people are looking at natural gas as an alternative.
How bullish would you say is Enchanted Rock on hydrogen as an alternative going forward?
Yes, we think it's a very promising technology. It's not quite there right now in terms of the availability at the scale we would need and at the price we would need, but it's a very promising technology and quite a few customers have expressed interest in it. So it's something we are tracking quite closely and already have in our technology roadmap to support. So I think, probably 5 to 10 years from now, it's going to be a very important part of the mix.
Could you share a specific example of a time when one of your generators made a significant impact during an outage, like maybe during the recent Texas situation or some such example?
Sure. I think the Winter Storm Uri last year in February was one of the best examples of that. So during that event, we have right now like over 200 sites that we are supporting. During that particular storm, there were about 143 sites that we had to support, which had outages basically. And through that storm, we were able to provide continuous power. We even made the news because, there were many of these HEB stores that were continuing to run through the storm because they were backed up by our solution. And many people then in the community were using that as the place they could go to and get supplies and stay warm and so on. There were some customers that we had to provide continuous power for over 4 days. I think during that entire outage, we provided over 5,000 hours of service essentially to our customers. The customers that we were able to keep running, they were even used in some cases by emergency responders and so on because they had power. They were one of the few places that had power. So I think that was one of the very good examples. We had very high reliability during that event, over 98%, I believe. That was one example. And then similarly, during Hurricane Harvey, which was, I think, in 2017, there were a bunch of Buc-ee's stores that we were providing backup for, and we kept those going. And, you know, again, the National Guard were using those as staging centers. So those are two examples, recent examples I can think of.
Can you talk about cost considerations of these microgrid solutions, and how do they compare to other types of strategies for enabling microgrids?
Yeah, one of the unique things about the Enchanted Rock model is that we are really focused on how we can reduce the cost of having resiliency. So when we talk about resiliency as a service, what we do is we don't ask the customer to pay for the full cost of the microgrid and the generators upfront. What we say is, look, you're going to only use these for a certain number of hours in a year, and it doesn't make sense for you to pay the full price for those systems. So what we like to do is we say we'll install it for you and the power will be there when you need it, but we are going to use those same systems to also sell power to the grid at times when there is high demand on the grid, or to provide any other critical grid services like an ERS service. What this allows us to do essentially is the cost of the systems, we can subsidize heavily to the customer. So let's take an example. If a customer today were trying to say, okay, I'm going to use diesel backup and, you know, pay $1,000 a kW for that, we might say, okay, you just pay us $200 or $300 for kW upfront for our generators, and the rest of the cost we will cover through the other services we provide. So that's a huge saving for the customer to provide resiliency for them, and it's enabled many, many more customers to consider having this critical backup. And compared now to other technologies like solar and battery, I think there are, of course, the costs of those are also coming down. But if you look at the needs of our customers, which is I must have continuous power for several hours at a stretch, this is still the most cost-effective option, we believe. As far as renewable natural gas is concerned, the prices are, of course, higher right now than natural gas. They're about double of that right now, even with the higher prices of natural gas. But those costs are coming down significantly as well as more and more investment is made in production.
So under this scenario, does the customer actually own the system, or does Enchanted Rock own it and provide power as a service on demand?
Right. So our default model is we would own the system and we would provide a service to the customer. We also have some investors who might sometimes choose to own the asset and basically buy it from us. But in either case, the customer is not having to pay for the asset. There are some customers, however, who've told us they would prefer to own the asset outright and have us just manage those assets for them, not just in terms of maintaining the systems, but also actually helping them sell power to the grid, because we have expertise in that area. So we can handle that and optimize the asset for them to help them get some revenue out of it. So we do have some contracts of that nature as well. But our default, our preferred option is the resiliency as a service, where we would continue to own the asset.
In closing, Jayesh, could you provide some thoughts on the future of microgrids in North America? And what do you see as the rate of adoption going forward, the level of interest on the part of utilities as well as CNI end users?
Yes. I think it's, you know, going to grow tremendously. And here's why. I think with the challenges that we have with grid infrastructure, with transmission, the utilities themselves are now partnering with many companies to try and expand the use of these distributed energy resources and microgrids. So in our case, for example, we are partnering with several utilities who are saying we want to offer these microgrids to our customers as a solution, and we want to partner with you to enable that. Right, that's something we haven't seen at this scale before. In the past, it was almost like the utilities would much rather own the assets themselves. They would, you know, put it in their rate base, and they always wanted much more centralized power distribution. But now we are seeing this more and more adoption of microgrids. So that's one thing that where I think the utilities coming on board is going to make a big difference. And then businesses themselves are also saying that in many cases they just want that security of power supply, and they are making the investments in the microgrids, especially as costs have come down. And of course, because of the sustainability initiatives that we've spoken about, they're saying that that's something they want to have more direct control over. So you're seeing a whole, you know, range of companies now in this ecosystem coming up to basically support these kinds of solutions. And so, yes, I'm very bullish on the fact that microgrids will really continue to expand quite significantly in the market.
JS, thank you very much for your time. And I look forward to staying in touch and following Enchanted Rock's progress going forward.
Thank you so much, Dan. It's a pleasure speaking with you.